It's Life and Taxes here on the Talk Station, FM 107.1. Life and Taxes with Andrew Foster of Harvell and Collins. As always, to remind you, the website, Harvell and, spell out the word, and, Harvell and Collins. As we begin the program, good morning, or, well, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Lockwood.
Thanks for taking the time to be with us. We are pre-recording this, of course. What's our topic for the day?
So today, Lockwood, we want to talk about timing issues relative to tax filings, relative to other issues that involve taxes.
Right.
You know, and I've got a case for us today that's illustrative of this fact about how critical timing issues can be in the tax world.
Uh-huh.
You know, everyone's familiar with seeing, you know, when I was a kid back in the day, people lining up at the post office on April 15th to get their tax return stamped,
right,
postmarked.
That was the important part. Even though it may not have arrived in ours, if it's on the postmark, and you know, it's interesting, we criticize the post office, but what a benefit. I mean, we wait till the literally 11th hour and the day that it's supposed to be there, and they accept it as having arrived once it is stamped at the post office.
Correct. Mailing is filing. That's the rule relative to that.
That is,
you know, we've talked about some other critical timing issues on this program before, such as you have 3 years from the date the return is due to claim a refund.
Right.
In the event that you fail to claim that refund within that 3 year period, if you wait 3 years and 1 day, that refund is poof. Now, it's no harm, no foul. You're not going to have any interest. You're not going to have any penalties because we've talked about it before. Penalties and interest are on the tax that's owed at that time. Well, there would be no tax owed. You would be due a refund. But guess what? You just made a gift to the federal government because you are not getting that money back. So those are some critical, you know, timing issues. The mailing is filing. Make sure you get those 3 year. Make sure you claim that refund within 3 years. And today, we're going to talk about timing issues that cost an estate a great deal of money.
Ooh.
Okay. So this case just came down, United States Tax Court, July 12th, 2022. It was DeMuth, the estate of William DeMuth Jr., to be exact, versus Internal Revenue Service.
Uh-huh.
And the question at hand was, just prior to the decedent's death, his son, who was acting under a power of attorney, issued 11 checks, Lockwood. 11 checks.
Let me get the timing on this one more time.
Yep.
Just prior to his death?
Correct. Just prior to the individual's death, Mr. DeMuth's death, his son goes and writes 11 checks for gifting purposes. So this is very common. You know, you and I have talked about it before, about how the fact is, you can write, everyone knows right now, $15,000 of gifts, which are under the what's called the annual exclusion. And what that means, Lockwood, is that gift is tax-free for both parties, meaning that you get the $15,000, it's not income. I give the $15,000, it's not taxable to me because it's under the annual exclusion amount.
Right.
I also do not have to file anything. I do not have to file a gift tax return to report this. It is just, as long as you stay below that number, you're going to be just fine. So 11 checks, the total of the 11 checks was $436,000, okay?
Okay.
So the issue in this particular case is obviously Mr. DeMuth has a estate that is potentially taxable. So what does he do every year? He gifts to multiple parties. So he's writing 11 different checks to all of these various parties who are basically family members. I mean, you're talking about kids and grandkids and cousins, right, and nieces and nephews. And I mean, he's just writing checks just to get this money out of his estate as quickly as possible. Now, the issue is, Lockwood, is that he wrote these checks on September 11th, and the individual dies 3 days later.
Okay.
3 days later. And only one of the checks, which was happened to be for $28,000, which was the time the gifting was $14,000 each, which was to two parties, only one of those checks had actually been deposited as of the individual's death. Four of the checks have been deposited. one of them had been deposited and actually had cleared the bank as well, had actually gone through the whole process, the whole legal process of clearing the bank. So the question at issue is, as the IRS said, we believe that the only check that passed muster for gifting purposes is the one that ran the full gamut.
And the money,
the one that was deposited and actually cleared the bank.
So what I'm hearing real quickly is, out of those 11 checks, 10 of them are, I'm going to use a description, clawed back into the estate.
Correct, exactly.
But wait a second.
And guess what that results in, Lockwood? This is where the, you know, it becomes real. $179,000 tax bill. So if those checks get clawed back into the bank, or clawed back into the estate, as you very aptly said, which is exactly what happens, then it would cost this estate $179,000. Now, there's no dispute. The checks were written prior to the individual's death. They were written under a valid executed power of attorney, which had gifting powers. Mm-hmm. So there's no issues on the facts. The question is, 10 checks, three of them were deposited, did not clear. Seven of them had not been deposited, had not cleared. Where are we? What happens in this particular fact scenario? And how does the judge ultimately analyze this issue? And interestingly enough, you look at gifting laws. So this happened in the state of Pennsylvania, and they look at exactly what is it to be a, and this is the key word here, completed gift, a completed gift. And so the analysis takes shape under Pennsylvania law, and in order to complete the gift, the individual must give up all dominion and control over those assets, okay? So here, the individual wrote the checks. Three of them were deposited. Seven of them were not deposited. Mm-hmm. And the analysis is basically the three that were deposited, the individual gave up sufficient dominion control. Those could not be put a stop payment on them, for example, and stop that check from clearing. But seven, Lockwood, seven of those checks totaling over $300,000 were clawed back into that estate because the individual had not given up sufficient dominion and control as to get those assets out of his estate, because theoretically, even though he did not do this, those could have been stopped paying.
They could have stopped paying.
And so guess what? That cost the estate in this particular case well over $100,000.
Well, this does lend itself to a thought. This is where an electronic transfer of funds is critical.
Critical. Yes, you're hitting nails on heads, which is, and this is why, I started this show talking about timing is everything relative to the tax world. And this just goes to show you where this individual probably thought they were doing everything right.
They did everything right.
Here it is. You've got, unfortunately, your father on his deathbed, and you're looking at his balances and his accounts and going, Houston, we have a problem.
Right.
We are over the estate tax amount right now based upon these assets, and unfortunately, Dad's not going to be with us much longer. What can we do? I know. Let's gift.
Right.
Let's write checks to everybody under the sun, and get this money out of his estate, because better for Peter or Paul to have it than the Uncle Sam.
Okay, we're walking.
So it's just interesting, Lockwood. He thought he was doing everything 100% correct, and then lo and behold, when those individuals received the check, either they didn't put the checks in the bank fast enough, or they didn't get them fast enough to be able to put them in the bank, and unfortunately, timing thwarted them in this particular situation.
Okay, I'm sitting here wanting to interrupt you because there's so many things I want to talk about. All right, number one, walk away from this as you're listening to the program. We're talking with, again, Andrew Foster of Life and Taxes, and we've all got life, but we're definitely going to share on the taxes too, I might add. Andrew Foster of Harvell and Collins, by the way, the number 726-9050. I would strongly recommend, considering what you're hearing today and the importance of, timing and also the process and procedure. But I have some real quick points for you, or questions for you, Andrew. So I'm going to hang out my tax attorney shingle for the moment and ask this question. Wait a second. Obviously, you said, I think in the opening, that this has been done before by this individual. Mr. DeMuth had gifted in the past.
Gifted in the past,
Number one, we have precedent.
History.
History. Number two, because based on that history plus the fact that these checks were written, intent. So we have history and intent. I thought that played a role in conversations with the IRS.
The problem there is that, and you actually, Lockwood, it's interestingly enough, you're hitting on elements of gifting. I mean, you don't even know you're doing it, but the elements of gifting, you know, donative intent. You know, the issue we had, though, is that last element, which is dominion and control.
Wow.
Did you give up sufficient dominion and control was not met. And the problem with that, Lockwood, is in legal terms, we have elements and we have factors, all right?
Okay.
Elements, every element must be met in order for that to be, you know, be done.
Okay.
Factors mean that you weigh the factors against each other and say, okay, do we have enough of these factors met in order to meet the test? Gifting is very, the gift rules are very clear. These are elements. If you don't hit every single one, you know, donative intent, you know, you completed gift, you know, make sure you've given up all your dominion and control. If you miss any of these elements on the gifting side of things, then your ship is sunk. So that's why it's so critical in this regard, you know, to get the right advice at the right time. Because you're right, Lockwood. If he'd have gone to someone and would have given, if someone would have called me on the phone and would have said, "Daddy's on his deathbed, what do I do?" Checks aren't the answer, unfortunately. You're right. It's okay. Can we get some wires done? You're exactly right. Can we go ahead and get this money sent out? Because the problem's going to be it's got to clear banks prior to the individual's death in order for us to have a chance with the IRS. Because these written checks that are sitting there that are unfortunately not deposited aren't going to be unfortunately worth the paper they're printed on.
So. This is a stunning story. Andrew Foster of Harvell and Collins. Real quick question for you. Andrew. Maximum amount of a gifting.
Yeah.
What is the maximum amount?
Yeah, so we're at, actually I said 15. It's 16,000 at the moment.
16.
Yeah, so $16,000 to gift at the present time. You know, like I said, at this point in time, it was back in the 2007, 2008 range, we're at 14,000.
Okay.
So we've actually increased. And as inflation increases, Lockwood, your numbers are going to go up on both your estate tax lifetime exemption as well as your annual exclusion for gifting.
And then the other question, to whom can you gift?
Yeah, good question. Anyone.
You
got some money for me?
Yeah, look, there's a point to this. And again, Harvell and Collins, go to that website, spell out the word and, harvellandcollins.com. Give them a call, 252-726-9050. You definitely want to talk to Andrew Foster about this. This is critical. And you're hearing this. This is just one of many elements, I might add. I'm just putting in my 2 cents worth, or in this case, $172,000 worth on that particular case. This is an important issue. And as we wrap it up with you, Andrew, we are looking at IRAs, and we're not talking about the stuff that you use to invest, but the Inflation Recovery Act. And that's going to have major tax impacts on a lot of people who are in S corporations.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I'm going to be, again, I've got to be careful. I'm standing here talking to a legal consultant, but we need to think about that. If those of us that have S corporations, because there's going to be some significant input from IRS on that. And if people want to distribute those funds, since that does come under personal income.
Yeah.
Think about that.
Definitely, yes. I think you're hitting on the nail on the head, Lockwood, and we'll certainly be dedicating a show to analyzing that bill as soon as it gets signed by the president. It looks like it's on the pathway to being signed, but, you know, anything can happen in Washington, D.C. in an election year, right?
Andrew Foster with us with Harvell and Collins, Life and Taxes here on the Talk Station.